Content warning, this episode has a brief mention of suicide.
There's nothing like a long walk on the beach, but over the past decade, a few beachgoers in the Pacific Northwest were met with a grisly surprise. Detached human feet, dozens of them, and no bodies alongside them. Scientists think there's an answer, but is it a simple scientific explanation, or is there something more sinister to blame? This week's episode is The Salish Sea Feet Mystery, Revisited.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Hood.
I'm gonna kill you. Well, we're back in Texas.
Yes, we are. What a wild
whirlwind
West Virginian weekend we had.
We did. A wild West Virginian whirlwind.
I had never been there, and what a beautiful part of the country it is. The amount of trees and babbling brooks and just we're from here where there's no hills. And just as soon
bullshit.
As we go somewhere with hills, we're like, God damn, look, there's a building up at the top of that hill. I wonder what that's like up there.
Right? That's why I was like looking at all the billboards and stuff, and it's like West Virginia, almost heaven. And I was like, wow, they're sort of exaggerating. And you get there and you're like, this is the most beautiful spread of
gorgeous,
like trees I've ever seen. Not to mention home to many monstrous things, like not just Mothman, who we did not get to go to Point Pleasant because it was about 3 hours out of the way, but we did get to see the Flatwoods Monster Museum.
We did. Amazing. And what a fun time. Did not disappoint. We each got a lantern.
Yes, we did. I have a lantern.
So very excited about that. Got Ella a few things too and got to take some fun pictures. We got to sit in one of the giant chairs that we had covered on the episode of the people that made them, and bought a little crocheted Flatwoods Monster keychain that is made apparently by a local high schooler that then sells them to the museum. So if you happen to be listening or you know who made them, they're
shout
adorable.
Out.
Ella loves it, as do I. I got two of them. Simon goes, this one mine? I was like, yeah, buddy. Sure. We'll share it.
Until you get tired of it, then just give it to me, please.
Right.
I'll put it with my other crocheted cryptids. But I think the solution to, I've been wanting to put a chair in my front yard, is I got to just get an Adirondack and paint it like one of those Flatwoods chairs.
Yeah. It's going to be big.
And
you're going to need a flight of stairs to get up to it, but it's worth it.
It'll be great. The neighbors will love it. And it'll go right along with all the other weird stuff we got going around here. But given that we were on the road this week, we weren't touring, though, because we were going somewhere special that you all will hear all about it on an upcoming future episode as well as a future YouTube video. But shout out to everybody that joined us live on TikTok while we were walking the halls of the Trans-Allegheny Asylum in Weston, West Virginia, the purpose of our trip.
It was. This episode today is kind of an update on something, and we're going to be doing an update on Trans-Allegheny and revisiting that too. We covered it back in 2020. We said we would never go because we were too scared.
Yeah.
But our bestie Nelson from the Ghost Guild reached out and was like, we're going if y'all want to come. And we never say no to Nelson.
Yeah.
And it is, it lives up to its name. It's very creepy, very spooky. I didn't ever feel anything evil or sinister. So that's good. But we got to use all the fun gadgets that the Ghost Guild has, and Tommy especially, had some interesting moments with the Estes method.
Yeah, I'm so excited for y'all to hear that episode and to see that video and everything. It's going to be so awesome. And it just, because it was, it's funny to hear us say we would never, ever go, and then we were just like walking the hall. So, to be fair, I think we were saying we didn't want to go just the two of us by ourselves all night overnight.
Correct.
But we had the wonderful guardrails of the Ghost Guild and the staff at Tala, who was great and there with us the whole time, making sure we were safe and everything was good to go. So it is a very cool place if you can get up there and visit. All the money that they get from any tour ticket revenue or rental revenue all goes right back into restoring it. And you can really see in some of the locations what it used to look like, just sort of abandoned, fallen down, to beautifully restored to a period time to really show you kind of the beauty of the place, but also not shying away from the atrocity. So we got a whole good future episode coming up on that. But we were gone this week, so we're like, well, we got to revisit one of our old episodes. And that's what brings you to this mystery today.
It so happens that the new Unexplained series on Netflix that recently got released, one of the episodes is all about the Salish Sea Feet mystery. So we thought, well, that's perfect because some new information has been introduced since we covered it. And not everyone has gotten to hear this because it was originally a minisode on Patreon several years ago.
Yeah, it was back in July 2019, and more stuff has come out since then. And the Netflix Files of the Unexplained episode also had some interesting different angles that we did not cover in ours. So we were like, oh, okay, well, we'll let you all hear this minisode as it was originally released in July 2019, and then we're going to come back here at the end with some updates for y'all.
You know what's wild?
What?
2019.
Dude! I was thinking that.
Who even knows what we say in this? Because transparency, I have not listened to the original since then. Oh, man. We just didn't know what was around the corner, did we? We sure didn't know. So you get to hear that, too. You get to hear all of us pre-2020, pre-pandemic.
Our adorable ignorant bliss where we're like, maybe in 2020 we'll go on a trip and we'll go to the Salish Sea ourselves. And yeah. We had no idea. All of those early 2020 episodes are ridiculous. Well, we're not going to go to the Pacific Northwest anytime soon, but we are going to get traveling again this month. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
May, you're hearing this May 1st, May 14th, 2 weeks from now, tour starts. God, time flies. What?
It does. Yes. 2 weeks from now, we will be in St. Louis, then Chicago, Milwaukee, Charlotte, Raleigh, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Toronto, Kansas City, Oklahoma City, San Diego, Phoenix, Las Vegas, and Dallas. We're going back on the road with our Full Moon Energy Tour. If you haven't seen it before, or even if you did see it, things have been added because a lot of new things have been happening with the moon.
We think it's up there.
It's been up there for a long time. Probably nothing new is happening. Not true.
No.
Every day I get a moon update from some various news source.
We're on the moon algorithm now, and you will be too after you come and see us. But it's a super fun show, and we can't wait to see y'all. Go to sinisterhead.com/live shows and come see us on the road. And in the meantime, enjoy this mini-sode and stick around at the end for an all-new update. When I was a kid, my sister made fun of my feet smelling. Like, no, I didn't smell other people's feet. My feet.
Your feet stunk?
My feet stunk. And to this day, still, frankly, still stink.
Well, most people's do.
It's bad.
I mean, do they smell all the time or just if you've been wearing certain shoes?
If I've been wearing any shoes?
Any shoes.
Yes. They don't just sweat on their own. But as a kid, I would take my shoes off and my feet would stink and my sister would scream and make fun of me. And my mom would say, it's okay. When I was your age, I had stinky feet too. And I said, did you grow out of it? And she went, no, they still stink. And I'm an adult now. And she was right. And now I'm an adult. And now my
feet there are certain shoes I have that make my feet smell more than others.
It's true. And I think like certain like fabrics.
Yeah, my
fabrics.
Converse. Oh, Lord.
Oh, they're bad.
Dude.
Do you wear socks?
No.
Well, that's why.
I mean, sometimes, but in the summer, no.
I saw on Instagram an ad for, you know, like you see the ads for vag sprays and it's like a lady and she looks all happy and it's like, you could have the freedom. It was like that, but for feet spray. And I just want to know how it knew.
Because it's listening to all your conversations.
I don't think I Googled my feet stink.
Did you
I
say may it out
have,
loud?
I may have. Probably.
It's always listening.
It's weird. I will say, unrelated, there's one of our clients is doing a deal with a medium size brand that gets advertised on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said the name a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I started getting Instagram ads for this company. I'm like, no, we're investing in them. I'm not buying their, I guess I could buy their stuff and support my client. But it was just weird that I've never ever Googled that company's name.
It's listening to you.
I never,
when you sign, when you get an Alexa or Google Home, you are essentially I mean, nobody ever reads it, but they have, Tommy was just telling me, there are people that listen back to they can always be listening to your conversations, but then there are people that are paid to listen back to conversations so they know like certain targeted words you're saying.
Oh, yeah. That job.
Imagine the stuff you would hear.
You probably hear. I have an Alexa, but it's unplugged because I can't figure out how to work it.
Why not?
I don't know. I plugged it in. I tried to do the app. It was a whole thing. I couldn't get the Wi-Fi thing to work.
Oh.
I felt like an old. I was like, I don't know. And it just,
we have a Google Home.
I have a Google Home that's in my bedroom, but half time I unplug it and use the plug-in to for
we have stuff. Alexa on our Roku, or not our Roku, our Fire Stick.
Oh, so the TV can hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I just think my iPhone hears me.
Yeah, it does.
God.
Big Brother's always watching.
They know. It knows. I'm telling you, it knows like the trajectory of your relationships. It'll know like if you're thinking about this or buying a car, whatever.
Targeted ads.
It knows. Yeah,
for sure.
It all knows.
Well.
You know what people don't know?
How these feet.
What the fuck is going on with this beach?
Washing up on this shore.
You're like, I want to go to a beach. And Google's like, I got a beach for you.
You ever heard of the Salish Sea?
I can tell you.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
Well, this month's minisode is the Salish Sea Feet. It was a listener suggestion, Aaron Alexis, on our Patreon Facebook group.
Thank you so much for being a part of that and for supporting the show. And thank you for the suggestion. This was a fun little jaunt.
It was. It was interesting and different.
And also, I found myself to feeling forlorn and melancholy for these abandoned feet.
Yes, I said to you, it's both amusing and sad.
Yes, every foot has a story.
It does. And these came from people.
Yes.
They weren't just lone feet. They were attached to somebody at some point.
You can't just grow a foot in a bucket.
No. Well,
I've tried.
You cannot.
You cannot.
Well, let's get into it. The Salish Sea is an intricate network of waterways southeast of British Columbia in the Pacific Northwest and encompasses the famous Puget Sound near the northwestern coast of the state of Washington.
Beautiful area up there.
I've never been. Always wanted to go up there.
I've been to Seattle. I've been to Pike Place Market. Had some nice chowder. I'm a big chowder fan.
Oh, I love chowder.
Good chowder.
You like clam?
Yes.
Clam chowder?
Clam chowder. I like bisques too, but it's hard to find
a good bisque.
Hard to find a gluten-free bisque. You got to watch out with these flour.
To thicken it up. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But Seattle was, I went in October. It was a little bit rainy.
That's perfect.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Man, I'd love to go back.
I'd love to go, period. Well, this beautiful waterway is home to ferries, shipping boats, a gorgeous, lush coastline, and over the past decade, an influx of severed human feet. The first foot was found in August 2007 in the northwest part of the Salish Sea near Jedediah Island, a marine park in British Columbia. A family was walking around the beach when they spotted the foot still nestled inside a white and navy blue sneaker. The family reported it, and when DNA tests were run, they revealed that the foot belonged to a man who had gone missing 3 years earlier.
I mean, you imagine your kids like, Mommy, what's that? And then you go and pick it up, and you're like, drop it.
You're looking for seashells. All of a sudden, you just find a foot.
You find a New Balance with a nasty surprise.
Yeah. Later that month, a right foot was found in a white sneaker off Gabriola Island, a Gulf island near Vancouver. That foot was similarly tested and found to belong to a man who had also gone missing just a year earlier.
So they're at least uploading to a database and finding some answers.
Yeah.
Except for who cut their feet off.
Oh, man. In February of 2008, another right foot was found, this time due east on Valdez Island. This foot was inside a shoe as well.
That should be pointed out that they're not just bare feet.
They're always inside shoes. Shoes.
With laces.
Boots. Yes.
Shoes
not,
with
they're
laces.
Not in a flip-flop.
Not a,
or a
not a
heel.
High heel. No. We're not have thong shoes.
You call them thongs?
No.
Okay. People that call them thongs, it makes me uncomfortable.
I want to put my foot in these thongs. You're like, wow.
That's a different thing you're
that
putting
was,
your foot into.
I was imagining a lady at Walmart saying that, I want to put my foot in these thongs.
I've heard people call them thongs, and it makes me very uncomfortable.
It's weird. Cisco was not singing about a shoe.
No, it sure wasn't.
Baby, make your booty go, da-da-da-da. I love it. Come on, he's not singing about flip-flops.
He's not singing about a flip-flop?
Come on.
That booty's going to flip-flop, though. Well, that spring, in May of 2008, a right foot washed up in the Fraser River, further south of the other found feet.
Name for Fraser Crane.
Oh, is it?
I hear the blues are
coming. No, it can't be. But he was in Seattle.
He was.
Did you like that show?
Hell yeah.
I did, too.
I love Fraser.
I had a weird... I liked it. I didn't love it, but I was always like...
It's comforting.
It's comforting and just kind of... easy to watch in a weird way.
Never really, there's stakes, but they're not too high. Because it's like, it was, oh,
it wasn't
Niles,
laugh out loud funny.
My tickets to the opera have been lost. It wasn't like ER where someone's dying.
It wasn't something
dying.
You could relate to, really.
No, because it's like, I did want to be as like fancy as them. I wanted to be like high society, but the whole time I was the dad. I was Roz. I was the dad. I wanted to be.
Dad was the best character. Dude. Or Eddie. Wasn't Eddie the dog? Yeah, he was so cute.
Sinister Hood will be right back. We just got back from an overnight paranormal visit to the Trans-Allegheny, and on our daytime tour, I had a little notebook out, and I was taking a ton of notes that we will use in our future episodes, something I may write later, whatever, and I learned that from a masterclass to...
Which one?
From the David Sedaris Nonfiction Creative Writing, Writing with Humor Masterclass. Guess what? We're nonfiction creative comedy writers, plus I just love David Sedaris. And one of his biggest recommendations is taking a notebook and then journaling about it later, and that is exactly what I did because I just really love doing that anyway, and he gave me a structure I would not have otherwise known, and I can't just call David Sedaris yet.
Yet. Well, picture that thing you've always wanted to learn. Now picture learning it from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That's what you get with Masterclass.
How much would it cost to take one-on-one classes from the world's best? Easily hundreds to thousands of dollars. That is, if they will return your phone call, which they might not. But with Masterclass annual membership, it's $10 a month. Memberships start at $120 a year for unlimited access to one-on-one classes with all 180-plus Masterclass instructors. Learn how to master negotiation with Chris Voss or think like a boss with Martha Stewart.
It's like Masterclass instructors are your own personal mentors that are going to help you reach the next level. Boost your confidence and find practical takeaways you can apply to your life and at work. And if you own a business or you're a team leader, use Masterclass to empower and create future-ready employees and leaders.
We love Masterclass and you will too. There are over 200 classes to choose from with new classes every month, like the one I talked about, Storytelling and Humor with David Sedaris, that helped me with my writing, or Graphic Design with David Carson that Paris is using to create graphics for the show. There's something on there for everyone and they make it in little bite-sized bites so it's easy to get through too.
I've also given it as gifts to multiple family members. I like to give experiences as gifts. I'm like, here's an annual membership. The world is your oyster. Whatever you want to learn about, there you go. And I like that. I like that it's a gift that keeps on giving. And also, it's unique. And you get, like, we can't call David Sedaris yet, but we can take his masterclass. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/creepy. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/creepy.
Masterclass.com/creepy.
Well, in June of 2008, the foot from February got its match with a left foot also found in the Fraser River. A DNA test revealed that foot number 3 and foot number 5 were a match. When tested, the feet matched a man who had gone missing in 2006.
So they're floating different ways. The feet are severed.
And at different times.
At different times. Man.
Foot number 4 got its match in November of 2008, when the matching left foot ended up near Kirkland Island, just west of the other foot. Both of these feet matched a woman who had been missing since 2004.
So it's taking about 2 to 3 years for these feet to...
For when, from the time that the body goes missing to the feet are being discovered, yes.
Correct. And they're, and it seems like they're, I can't tell from the little, like the research that we did, though, the people were from sort of the area. It wasn't like they were out at sea or they were super far south or super far north. They were sort of reasonably close.
A year later, one more foot was discovered, also in the Fraser River, and matched a woman who had been missing since 2008. The next foot to wash up was not until August of 2011, when a left foot was found in False Creek, further north of all the rest of the finds. Authorities tested this one, but were unable to find a match.
Which creek did they find it in?
False Creek. That's why they couldn't find a match. Sometimes they would be so deteriorated by the elements that they just couldn't get a good DNA
this
match
is
off of them.
Something I learned from this, I thought as long as you had some sort of body
bone or something
something to scrape out that you could test it, but it turns out if something has been so severely decomposed in water or over that long period of time that you even if you have organic matter that the DNA can get broken down.
Interesting.
I did not know that.
That is very interesting. In November of 2011, a right boot, foot inside, washed up on Salamat Lake, Port Moody. Older than all the previous finds, this foot belonged to a man who had been missing since 1985.
I wonder if the boot preserved it longer because it's leather.
Lost Girls of Panama.
Yes.
Similar thing happened. They find her tennis shoe with the foot inside.
Or the hiking boot. Was it a hiking boot?
I believe it was, maybe. Yeah, I think it may have been a boot.
Like an ankle, yeah, like ankle high.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, I wonder if it, you know, it preserves it for
it
that long.
It does preserve it.
And also, it's just interesting when you look at a map of all these waterways that it's one flowing into the next, into the next, into the next.
Way of the currents.
I guess so. You can't predict the which way the water goes. Actually, you can't. It's current oceanography. There's people, it's their job that do that.
There's a lot of people that
but
predict
it. But it sounded very poetic.
Yes, it did. Foot number 8, which had been found in August of 2011, got its match over a year later in October of 2012, when foot number 8's right counterpart in a matching blue and white sneaker was found in the same place as its twin, False Creek. Analysis of the DNA matched the feet to one another, but officials were not able to link it to any missing persons.
You know what else matches the feet? Shoes.
Isn't that crazy?
It's same shoe.
Obviously, they'd be in the same shoes.
Yeah.
Presumably.
And I guess it is possible that two different people wearing the same shoes went missing. But also, it's a blue and white Nike or Adidas or whatever.
Yeah.
It's probably.
I think it's Occam's razor.
Yes.
The next discovery was not until 3.5 years later, in February of 2016, when a left foot in a dark blue and gray New Balance sneaker was found on Botanical Beach. Shortly thereafter, the matching right foot was also found on the same beach. DNA analysis was not possible, but anthropological and circumstantial analysis led officials to conclude that the two feet were a match.
I'm going to say circumstantial analysis is my prediction that they were like, oh, it's the same shoe.
Gotta be the same foot.
Same shoe, same person. Size, same place.
I mean, I think that's pretty strong evidence,
though, for
it to be such a odd thing to have happened.
And I bet even if you can't test the DNA, you can say, oh, this clearly has been decomposing for 3 years.
Yes.
You know, you could match the time.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Decomp time.
Nearly 2 years later, in December of 2017, a man walking his dog near the Jordan River found the 13th foot encased in a boot with a tibia and fibula still attached. When officials tested the DNA, a match came back to Stanley Okumoto, age 79, who had gone missing in September of 2017.
Now, this photo was disturbing. Did you see this photo?
I have not.
It is a black leather boot sitting upright and just straight up looks like
a bone just sticking straight up.
Two bones because there's a tibia and a fibula. It looks like Rodney, the skeleton I have in my guest room.
Yes, Rodney.
It just looks like his leg.
It's, yeah, that's what it is.
Bone white.
And now imagine
no meat.
You're just strolling down the beach, seashell hunting, enjoying the sand beneath your toes. Oh, what's that up ahead?
Don't touch it. Your
what
dog.
What do you do? Your dog runs off straight up out of the burbs.
Yes, just runs back with the bone.
Just takes this foot. You're like, bring that back.
Get back here, Buffy.
In May of 2018, another foot appeared on Gabriola Island, and on New Year's Day, 2019, the most recent foot was discovered when beachgoers on the south end of Jetty Island came upon another foot, this one inside of a boot. It was discovered this foot belonged to 22-year-old Antonio Neal, who had gone missing August of 2016.
Well, my first inclination would be don't go to those beaches no more. But really,
they're probably very pretty.
First of all,
despite all the feet,
the photos are gorgeous. I mean, statistically, you probably won't find a foot.
No, I think some people go out there hoping they will.
Foot hunting.
They go foot hunting.
Yeah. I've never been foot hunting. Not the same as Bigfoot, honey.
No, much different.
Different area.
While the discovery of a lone foot would certainly be alarming, the British Columbia Coroner's Service and other law enforcement officials want the public to know there is nothing sinister about these feet.
Of course they do.
Likewise, U.S. law enforcement on the American side of the water want you to know there's nothing to fear.
This smells like a government cover-up. Fear not, people, good people of British Columbia.
Don't fear the feet.
They're fine. They're where they want to be.
While some have posited these disembodied feet are remains of plane crash victims or the handiwork of one of the area's many notorious serial killers like Ted Bundy or Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, The explanation, though, is much more scientific and innocent.
We got to do a Gary Ridgway episode. That's a five-parter.
Our friend Sean Frombach played him on...
That's right. Murder Made Me Famous.
Murder Made Me Famous, yes. That's right. Yeah, he has some very crazy stories about it, too. Some scenes they had to film in a creek.
Oh, my.
Yes, where he... And Sean is very funny. He's a very funny comedian.
Oh, he's
But
hilarious.
He's also a great actor. So to hear him tell these stories were very funny.
Gary Ridgway acting.
Yeah.
Ugh.
According to a forensic anthropologist at the King County Medical Examiner's Office, a large population of people live near the waterways in the Seattle-Tacoma area, which means a large population of bodies end up in the water, mostly from suicides and drownings. Over 7 million people live near the Salish Sea, leaving room for a lot of bodies to end up in that water.
Here's my argument.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas is home to, 6.5 million people?
Yes.
We have Lake Ray Something. Hubbard. We have White Rock Lake. You don't see a bunch of damn feet floating all over the place.
No, but we don't have the currents that they do. I don't know.
Oh, God. Are you saying there's bodies in our lakes?
Somebody found a body in White Rock.
That's true.
Just
pretty
last
recently.
Month.
Yeah. Damn it.
But why the Salish Sea? What is causing these human parts to converge on the shores of this beautiful body of water? Lots of large cities have bodies of water nearby, but that does not necessarily mean body parts will end up on the shores.
See?
Thank goodness. There's something about the Salish Sea that attracts these parts, and a University of Washington oceanography professor may know why. According to Professor Parker McCready, great name, by the way.
It's a great name. Professor McCready.
In a letter to Vox magazine.
Things that float on the ocean surface move with the currents, but are also pushed back a bit by the wind, and this can be significant in getting them to shore. The prevailing winds here around the Salish Sea are west to east, and so floating stuff in this part of the Pacific gets blown to the coast effectively. Have a few feet.
I like how you said floating.
Floating.
Because that Texas had to get in there
every time. This good thing's going to be floating. Floating and boating.
Floating and boating.
So, yeah, that's a good point that I guess the way the winds blow, it's
very poetic again.
The way the winds blow, the severed feet are unable to
the way
reach
the winds
the
blow
tides.
And the tides change, the feet will be upon your beach in no time.
When there's one set of footprints.
You know what that means.
That's the other foot hasn't washed up yet.
Feet are not unique to the Salish Sea and Pacific Northwest. Cities such as Portland, Oregon, Charleston, South Carolina, St. Louis, Missouri, and as far away as Rio de Janeiro and even Fiji have experienced detached feet and side shoes washing up on their coasts.
Oh, cool. This is a horrifying phenomenon the world over.
I haven't been to beaches enough to have found one of these.
Now I'm going to beaches in the next month or so. All I'm going to do is be on the hunt for
Don't go up to any abandoned shoes.
I'm going
to
go butt hunting.
If you see an abandoned shoe, leave it be.
Heather, I want to walk with you along the sunset beach. I'm going foot hunting. Get out of here, honey. You got to hunt me a foot. My dad had a friend named Foot. It was his nickname.
His first name?
It was his nickname. He was...
Why?
He's giant. He had huge ass feet.
Oh, that's why?
They called him Foot.
They just call him Foot?
I think his name was Gerald.
Aw.
But they called him Foot.
And he was okay with it?
Yeah. They loved him. He loved it. That was his nickname. My dad had a lot of wacky friends from his days in the movers union that he
okay.
But one of them, his name was Foot.
I imagine if you had big feet, you'd be a good mover. You could cover a lot of ground in a short amount of time.
It's true. And also lift a lot of things. Foot was giant. And
Foot giant.
Foot was giant. And my dad said, Foot must have weighed 400 pounds. And he's almost 7 foot tall. And I was like, I don't think that's a real person.
But imagine a foot.
That's
an actual
that big.
Foot, 7 feet tall, weighs 400 pounds.
It's like the Hamburger Helper, like anthropomorphic glove.
Or the
but it's a
statue on Lost.
What is that? Is it a foot?
Yeah, there's a foot statue on
Lost. I haven't watched Lost in forever. I was
just talking when I was in San Antonio with our good friends David Allison and Ray Maddox mm-hmm. about how phenomenal that show is and how we all want to go back and rewatch it.
I think I told you the story on the show, actually, that I watched maybe three seasons, but I didn't finish it. And it was after the finale aired like a week later. And I got shit hammered drunk right by Wrigley Field at the Cubby Bear. They were doing test tube shots. And we were eating bocce pizza. And you know, when you come down off that drunken, the drunken blur. And she said, anyway, that's how Lawson did it. I was like, no, start over. She goes, God, I've been talking for like 35 minutes. I was like, oh, I missed it.
You should watch it. I think I'm going to go back and rewatch it.
It's too daunting. I don't like a long series.
Yeah, that you gotta
I watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer for the first time as an adult.
Never seen it.
It's really good. I started watching Angel. I lost interest, but Buffy's like, I don't know.
But you watched The Office, and it was more serious.
Yeah, I watched Seinfeld constantly,
and that's longer than Lost.
Yeah, but I kind of do. I skip around. I shuffle play those.
Yeah, Lost is one you got to watch in order.
I don't like to have to remember stuff.
The Office and Seinfeld are easy.
You can retain it
if you need to, but you don't have to retain it to enjoy the
show.
They'll
mention, really. Oh, you remember so-and-so. Like Jake Jarmel, they were talking about him the other day, and I said, I forget why she broke up with him. I was like, oh, it's the Juju Fruit guy. She stopped to get Juju Fruit when he's been in the accident. Yes.
And then Jake Jarmel was, oh man, what was that guy's name? He had the MTV show.
Oh, I didn't know he was
famous. The Extreme Show. Uh-huh, yeah. Oh, shit. He was hugely popular in the 90s and had an MTV show where he would do extreme sports.
Marty Rackham?
No, that's not who I'm thinking of. Maybe Jake Jarmel. Is Jake Jarmel the really hot one that George had the man crush on?
No, Jake Jarmel's the one with the little tiny glasses, and he won't tell.
That's right.
He won't tell the guy from Pendant Publishing where he got his glasses from.
That's right. Who was the one George had the man crush on? That's the one that had the show on MTV that I'm thinking of.
Tony?
Yeah, Tony.
I wonder, who's Tony? Oh, here we go. A Mimbo. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're thinking of Dan Cortez. MTV's Dan Cortez. Yes, the Mimbo.
He played.
Correct. Yes. MTV's Dan Cortez. Yes. That man, Dan Cortez always makes me think of Stefan when John Mulaney inserted Dan Cortez into all the descriptions of Stefan's bars, and Stefan got really Bill Hader got very giggly because he didn't expect it. It's a very funny clip.
I haven't seen that.
I'll share it on the Patreon Facebook page because it's very funny. We got very far afield.
Yeah,
of the
we
feet.
Sure did. We got feet to talk about.
We're just going to talk about pop culture references for 30 minutes.
Well, feet were washing up all over the place.
Back to the
we
feet.
We haven't seen any yet.
But I'm on the hunt.
Heather's on the foot.
Heather McKinney, foot hunter. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Well, spring has sprung all over Texas, and my allergies have definitely been suffering. I just can't deal with the sneezing, the runny nose, but I have finally found a solution, Heather, and it is the Astepro nasal spray. It is a godsend. I have been suffering with allergies for so long, and literally within like minutes, I felt so much better after using this.
It's a when you find a game changer like that living here, it's like, I love you, baby. Marry me.
No. Yeah. You'll recommend it to anybody and everybody because we're all suffering together right now. So, and it's so pretty outside and you want to enjoy the weather, but you also don't want to be like a prisoner of your own nose. So you got to get that Astepro, man. Well, shout out to Astepro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Like I said, I use Astepro. Tommy uses Astepro. Mm-hmm. He had used it even before they became a sponsor. And when we got it, he was like, this stuff is really good, by the way. So Tommy Brown endorses it, then we all know that it's okay.
I was going to say, if it has a Tommy Brown seal of approval, that's all any of us need to know.
Astepro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours.
Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
You just got to do some sprays in the morning, and then that sets you right for the whole day, because especially like you don't want to, if you're having to record or something and you got a runny nose, you're sniffling all the time, you just got to do some sprays and then you're set for the day. Two sprays, you're set for the day. That's what I'm going to start saying.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to astepro.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go today. Astepro.com.
Astepro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Well, additionally, since there has been so much media coverage of these found feet, beachgoers and tourists are more likely to look into a shoe, like Heather's going to do.
Uh-huh.
Whereas before, they may have kept walking without a second look. It is quite possible that for years prior to the feet making the news, they were being passed by without a second glance.
And who knows? They could have got picked. You know, people go and clean the beaches up and they just stick it with your beach stick.
If it's in a shoe, there were several of them that said they saw this shoe. There was still a sock in it. And then they pull back the sock and then the foot's inside. So you might not even notice it. It's not as if it's a fresh foot.
Correct.
It's bone. It's
decomposed.
Badly decomposed. Goo. Yeah. It's not, or it's just like a skeleton, like the tibia. So it's not like a.
And fibula.
And I'm sorry. I did not
Don't forget
mean to
the fibula.
Just shank the fibula.
Don't give the fibula the shaft.
Oh, man. Well, why feet? The adult human body has 206 bones, so why are the ones washing up on beaches always feet? One major recurring feature of these found feet are their shoes, specifically tennis shoes and boots. In the decomposition process, small insects and crustaceans chew on the ankles, causing the feet to detach from the rest of the body. When encased in rubber and polyurethane, two buoyant materials, they wash with the winds right to shore.
Feet wash with the winds right. This is very poetic.
It's very
fun. But it's true.
Y'all didn't know that this was going to be a very poetic episode about
this
feet.
This is our poetry episode. I guess you do think about it, that, you know, your tennis shoes are made out of non-biodegradable
mm-hmm.
running shoes or non-biodegradable
these
chemical.
These people are wearing Toms.
No, these are rubbery.
Yeah. Nike, New Balance.
Non-organic materials.
Leather boots.
And when the fish get to chomping, they don't want the rubber.
Mm-mm.
So they just eat the meat and leave the rest.
Yeah. And because your foot is encased in it, it mm-hmm. acts as a protective barrier against things that would try and chew it up.
Normally, yeah.
Modern scientific principles indicate that a human body could survive intact for weeks or even months fully submerged in the ocean. However, according to a 2016 study, the waters of the Strait of Georgia, an arm of the Pacific Ocean between Vancouver Island and British Columbia, are so highly oxygenated that it is able to support the kind of aquatic life that can strip a body of its meat in less than 4 days. So that's another reason why we haven't been seeing them around here.
That's true.
We don't have this kind of water over here.
I didn't want to tell you this.
Oh.
They did a study with pigs.
I saw.
Okay.
And I saw, and then I thought, I bet she left this out of her notes because she didn't want to upset me.
Yes.
I was like, that was very sweet.
And the photos are very sad.
I only saw the photo of two pig carcasses like in a
little
cage that looked like it was going to be dropped into
the ocean. Yeah, but they said they were shocked at how quickly that the animals in that area of the ocean just strip the bodies super quickly. So it seems like
it's a plentiful ecosystem.
It sounds like it. And so I was telling Paris about this and he said, so when you like eat shrimp, they ate human bodies. I was like, some of them.
Yeah.
It probably. Says crustaceans. I mean, arthropods.
That could be said for anything that comes out of the sea.
I guess it's true. Everything
crabs.
Eats everything else.
I mean, yeah.
And when you eat, like, especially shrimp, they have the doo-doo vein behind them. You're eating that shrimp doo-doo.
You got that doo-doo in there.
Get that shrimp doo-doo.
Oh, I caught this guy after lunch.
Hi.
That was
the ocean called.
Chris Farley. They want their shrimp back.
They're running out of shrimp.
Well, if you're out searching for shells and run across a lone foot, don't panic. Law enforcement has said to just give them a call, and most importantly, don't touch it.
Okay. As a self-proclaimed foot hunter,
rule
number one is don't touch.
No, yeah. Don't touch the foot. You got to preserve it.
Rule number two, never stop hunting.
Rule number three, there are no rules.
That's right.
Well, so what do we think?
Well, you know, it's interesting when there's a mystery that seems so sinister. Because when I first got this suggestion and I just briefly Googled it, I thought people are being murdered.
Yeah. It would make sense that they were from plane crash victims
yes.
or from serial killers victims
yes.
dumping them in the water or whatever.
Dumping them in the same spot. But then I don't like, I mean, I'll take that back. I really like learning new things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like on this one, I learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like about why your foot disarticulates from your body when you're decomposing, about the oxygenated waters of the Salish Sea that's causing these animals to chomp on folks, and about how maybe we should wear recyclable shoes. Yeah. Jesus Christ. When we throw our shoes, First of all, I always donate my shoes. But when someone throws shoes away, they just go in a landfill.
That can be said for probably 90% of trash.
You just start to look around and think, man, all this stuff is going to end up in a landfill.
Oh, yeah. I think about that all the time when I because even recycling
still
takes years and years for that stuff to break down.
Mm-hmm.
Diapers, those get tossed in landfills.
Man.
Yeah. Landfills are, if you stop to think about a landfill.
Have you ever been to a landfill?
No. I don't want to.
Don't go.
Have you been?
My old job, we needed to get rid of these monitors, and they were like not flat screens. They're, you know, the tube monitors.
Yeah.
And apparently you can't recycle them. There's like no place, but you can take them to, like, you can't get the city to pick them up. Hmm. You can take them to these specialty bins at the dump. You yourself have to drive to the dump. Wow. Same with tube TVs. Well, most people just throw them out.
Yeah, I was going to say, what if you just throw them in the trash?
Then they just go in the trash. But if you want to recycle them, my old boss was very nice.
Gotcha.
He loaded up his Mercedes with all these and drove it to the dump. And he said, "Do you want to go to the dump with me?" And I said, "Well, yeah, obviously. Of course I do. I want to see what the dump looks like. I've never been." It looked like a Disney movie, WALL-E or something. Like, you pull up.
Yeah, it's just scrap metal.
Where the trucks come and dump. You know, the trucks back in, they mash some sort of pneumatic button, and it goes, and, you know, it tips up and dumps the trash in there. And it's all in this big cavern. And then on the other side of it, if you kind of walk around, you see it's like miles.
Yeah.
What appears to, it's trash city.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, also, it fucking stunk.
Yeah,
as I bet. Like garbage.
Is there stuff flying around?
There's lots of flies and bugs.
And birds and stuff.
There were really, not because we were in like this covered part where the bins were, where you like back your truck up or your car and you put your recycling in or whatever. But I'm sure there was like birds and stuff flying out there.
Do people that work there wear masks?
Like hazmat suits, masks, goggles.
You have to.
I bet even with all of that, blessed our waste management workers, because no matter how much shit that you put on yourself, you're still going to smell like garbage. It's like my friend that worked at the barbecue restaurant.
You're always going to smell like barbecue.
No amount of shampoo will ever get that smoked meat smell out of your hair, which some people will find an aphrodisiac.
Yeah. Cuddle up next to me with that.
Give me that brisket hair.
But you probably don't even know you smell like trash, but others might be able to detect it. But like you said, it's not a job for the faint of heart, unless the people that are willing to do it.
It is
It is a job that is always going to be in.
You ain't
going to
get laid off.
Yeah.
People are always throwing shit out.
Yeah.
So.
But I think about that a lot when I throw stuff away. Like, it's just going to go to a landfill.
Mm-hmm. It's sad.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's why try and reduce your carbon footprint.
Yeah,
I recycle when you can.
Donate stuff.
I donate clothes. Yeah, I can't think of the last time I just threw away clothes or something like that.
I used to date somebody that would just go, "I don't want these." It's a bag of t-shirts. And I was like, I'm like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm just throwing it away." I was like, "Why?"
I knew a girl. I worked with a girl that threw away her clothes because she didn't want to donate them because they felt personal to her. So she didn't want the thought of someone else wearing them.
She's going to go to hell.
So she would just throw away tons of clothes.
Wasting.
To be fair, she had terrible taste. So, well, I mean,
people, the homeless people don't want your muffin stumps. It's like, we don't want your ugly ass shirts. But my grandmother, and then, because my grandma grew up in like the Depression, and they had like government cheese and stuff like that. And you could not. In my family, you do not throw shit out.
No.
Ever.
My great-grandmother also grew up in the Depression and was very poor. And at Christmas or a birthday or anything where she would receive a wrapped gift.
Save the wrapping paper.
She would take so much time and be so tedious in taking off this wrapping paper and then gently and delicately fold it up and then keep it. So, because waste not, want not. Like, they grew up, you did not waste anything.
No, you couldn't. You couldn't afford to waste anything.
Yeah, and so that
was the same.
Ingrained in her from a little girl.
Just go around getting everybody's tissue paper.
Yeah.
Or do you want that bag? Are you going to use that bag?
Oh, and I love keeping bags.
I do, too.
We have a closet full of gift bags.
Oh, yes. I always, on purpose, when I give a bag gift, I don't put mine to from on the matching tag so someone else can use it. You stick a card in there anyway.
Yeah, don't use that.
But that way they can reuse the bag.
Because then you got to tear it off.
Yes.
We reuse a lot of boxes for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And there will just be sticker of
tape like over tape. Over yeah. Tape. I'm fine with that.
Like six generations worth of stickers.
I'm
on
not
this
here
box.
To judge.
Oh, yeah.
It just feels like a
box.
Sin.
I love a good bag. Love a good foot.
That's right.
Yeah. So donate your stuff.
Definitely.
Recycle.
Reduce your carbon.
Reduce
foot
your carbon.
Print.
Stop using straws.
You didn't get my
I'm guilty
joke.
Of it.
Footprint. Foot. Foot. Christy.
What'd you say?
Reduce your carbon.
Oh, gosh. Ugh. Sorry. I zoned out for a second. I was thinking about how I use too many straws, to be honest.
You know, is this gross? You can tell me. I just reuse these plastic straws.
No, you're using them.
It's just me drinking the water out of them.
Yeah. I think, and they also make the, like, durable plastic straws that are intended to be used over and over.
I got one with a Fat Tuesday margarita in Las Vegas, and I still drink out of that like the classy broad I am.
Hey, you are doing you're reducing your carbon footprint.
I like to drink out of the Mardi Gras the Fat Tuesday's Mardi Gras margarita reusable cup because it says, "Hey, I like to recycle and party."
Is that what it says?
No, it's just my personal.
Well, you should get a cup. add that on.
Oh man.
Well, that has been this month's minisode.
Thanks for listening.
Yes, thanks for the suggestion. Let us know what you guys think, and always please.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Well, our coverage that you just listened to was from July of 2019, but since then there have been quite a few developments. In total, feet from 24 individuals have been found. In March of 2021, National Geographic did a profile on Professor Parker McCready of the University of Washington in Seattle, who we quoted in the minisode, as well as Professor Gail Anderson of Simon Fraser University. Professor Anderson conducted tests in the Salish Sea to determine the time of decomposition of bodies in the ocean. In her work, Anderson noted that bodies in that area were more likely to sink due to the oxygenation of the local waters and an increased level of sea scavengers in the area. According to her research, a body washed into the Salish Sea area would be ravaged by sea creatures in just 4 days. This corroborates earlier theories that sea creatures weakened the body's ankle joints during scavenging, leading to the detached feet.
This is why, and I think you and I agree, and most of the people listening agree, probably everybody, that research is so important that you don't think about, it's not just that, what does a body do in the ocean or the water? It's like, this specific area, what does the body do?
Sure. Different bodies of water, there's different animals, currents, temperatures. I mean,
chemicals,
one body of water is the same as the next. So I like when people are like, maybe this got answered in one way, but there's still families out there that are grieving the loss of loved ones that have been identified or maybe that are missing, that they're wondering, like, could they have met a similar fate? So the more information we have to give families and victims closure and answers, we're always a fan of that.
No, for sure. Especially in a situation like this where the people went missing from sort of far away. And so the Parker McCready's work on the ocean currents and then Professor Anderson's work on what happens once the currents bring them there, that kind of stuff, it's like you said, it just each piece builds to something else that's going to help somebody.
In November of 2021, sadly, another shoe was found. On Locust Beach in Bellingham, Washington, a size 7 Brahma work boot was found washed up. Inside the boot was a tube sock containing the bones of a right foot. It was determined that these remains belonged to a male. He remains unidentified. The next month in Port Angeles, Washington, a size 8 New Balance shoe washed up on the mouth of the Elwha River. It was determined that the foot belonged to Jerilyn L. Smith, who went missing from Squim, Washington in January of 2018. The 68-year-old is believed to have jumped off the Elwha River Road Bridge. She was mourned by those left behind, including a colleague at the local Chamber of Commerce, who called her.
Always supportive and always upbeat. Well, that was a really sad case because she was missing, you know, I think they did like 2 days worth of searches, but I guess the way the river runs at that part, and that's kind of the bad part of when someone goes missing near a body of water, you're kind of at the mercy of currents and weather around that time. And so it was just a big struggle to kind of find what happened. And it's hard to say there's ever a positive, but it's one of those where at least you have some sort of some indication of your loved one whenever the shoes do end up washing up, because you otherwise might not ever have, like you said, closure. It never helps. It's never an answer, but it's at least some
piece. It's a piece of the puzzle to maybe fill in like what happened, and at least have some physical thing of them that you could bury if that's what you want to do. I think having some physical piece helps a lot of people with closure, and just having some, you might not have all the answers, but you have some puzzle pieces. And then, you know, sometimes it doesn't get completed, but to have even a little information, I hope that that helps the family of Geralyn.
I hope so too.
Still, several of the feet remain unidentified and continue showing up. On July 23rd, 2023, another foot was found on Gonzales Beach in Victoria, BC. No details are available publicly at this time, and the sex of the victim remains unknown. The BC Coroner's Service, or BCCS, are investigating and welcome any tips from the public. In 2024, Netflix released the series Files of the Unexplained. The final episode of Season 1 covered the Salish Sea mystery and included a possible cryptid cause. For generations, First Nations people of the area have exchanged tales of Hayatalik, the enormous lightning snake that wriggled from side to side. There have also been 235 alleged sightings of a large ocean serpent documented in the area between 1880 and 2010. John Kirk is the chairman of the British Columbia Scientific Cryptozoology Club and a retired Mountie with two decades of experience. He has looked into sightings of the creature he has called the Cadborosaurus and told Netflix,
"If you don't think that there are strange things in the ocean, then you don't know what you're talking about."
Hard accurate. Agree on that one.
Accurate. He does say it with such a, like, come on. It's, the ocean's full of crazy stuff. And it's like, it is.
Oh, yeah. It is. I mean, even the things we know of are strange. Yes, so I then imagine all the things we don't know about.
That's what you think if you go, hey, there's a stingray. I just want you to know it's black, but it actually has lights on it. It's like light up stingray on one side. It's black with dots. It looks like little tiny Christmas lights. And when you flip it over, it's kind of the pattern of an like a throw rug, but also it lights up. You'd be like, okay, did your kid draw this? No, it's a fucking real thing, man. There's all kinds of stuff down there.
And that honestly kind of sounds like an alien. Yes. Like some kind of, that's something that someone might see and be like, oh, okay, there are UFOs under the sea. Or perhaps it is one and it's just vibing and goes to the surface for a little bit and then goes back down. Mm-mm. But all that to say, there's so much that we don't know about. And if the Cadborosaurus is down there too, who am I to say that it might not be?
Right. If you call it a hyetolic and someone else calls it a Cadborosaurus or a Plesiosaur or whatever, it's like, we're all just talking about the same thing, baby. Mm-hmm.
Lifelong BC resident Sylvie Beauregard was out walking her dogs on the beach along the Salish Sea when she stopped to take a rest. When she threw a toy for her dog to fetch from the waves, the dog cowered behind her. It was then Sylvie saw what she thought was the head of a sea lion. She then saw its body.
The best way I can describe it, it was like snake-like. So there'd be a bump, then the water, then another bump, then the water.
The beast turned its head sideways and looked at Sylvie before it sunk beneath the waves and swam away.
That beast is like, do you like what you see?
Just the knowing that it saw you. It acknowledged you. Wink. But also, it acknowledged you and was like, bye. It could have just come straight at you.
Yeah, it could have come straight at you or ghosted you, which would have been rude. But instead, it decided to make a nice little eye contact. But yeah, if you throw your dog a toy and it turns and runs behind you, and then you think, oh, a sea lion. Perhaps the dog was afraid of a sea lion. And then it's back and you're like, oh, shit. There's a snake with a sea lion head.
Oh, where does it end? Just like that giant anaconda they recently found.
Yes.
The biggest that we know of. That does not mean the biggest that there is. What was it, 26 feet long?
Something like that. And it weighed a bajillion pounds and it was so fat around. Huge, like a fire hose.
I still don't understand/can't believe that a dude was just snorkeling next to it in like business casual.
It looks like he was working a shift. I don't know
what was going on there, but he left the office and he just jumped right in this river.
Yeah, he sold paper all day and then was like, I'm going to go take some underwater footage of an anaconda. I guess dress for the job you want. I don't know. You're an underwater sea explorer. Just lean in, man. You're good.
You got to do it. Yeah. But that was a big boy. It was a big one.
Whew. So, yeah, you think there are in existence, there are serpents that are big as hell that, you know, you would see hump, water hump. Because that, if you see a snake body that big, to me, that implies there's a snake head that big. And I'm not trying to fight that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anything that could wrap itself around me.
Also that.
And there's still some room. Mm-hmm. And just squeeze me.
Yeah. I look like a cartoon character. Yeah. No. I'm out.
Sylvie's description resembled other Cadborosaurus sightings, with people describing loops, coils, and humps along the beast's long body. In the 1880s, a journalist in Vancouver reported that a
marvelous sea serpent
had been seen again near Cape Flattery, where the Salish Sea dumps into the Pacific Ocean.
You got kind of a Yowie thing here where there was a long generational history of First Nations people who in that area really relied on the sea for their food and, you know, basically living right there on the water. And then you have colonizers coming in and then they start going, you know what? We saw a big ass snake out there. It's like, yeah, we would have told you that. Nobody asked us.
Nobody don't go out there. Nobody asked. Or we say something and they're like, okay, whatever.
Sure.
And then it's like, okay, you go find out on your own.
Godspeed.
You might have a different name for it, but we're trying to tell you that it's out there.
She awaits. But yeah, I do like the newspaper that's like, we have spotted a serpent again. And it's like, wait, what? Where was the first sighting?
Well, we didn't report that one because we didn't think it was important at the time. But now we see.
We are aware.
There seems to be a pattern here. Decades later, at Naden Harbor in July of 1937, an unidentified animal was pulled out of the stomach of a sperm whale. Photos from the time show a long creature lying on a canvas tarp. A witness described it as
the remains of a sperm whale's lunch, a creature of reptilian appearance, 10 feet 6 inches in length, with animal-like vertebrae and a tail similar to that of a horse. The head resembles that of a large dog, with features of a horse and the turned-down nose of a camel.
This came to be known as the Naden Harbor carcass, and its veracity remains debated. Sounds like a looker. So, yeah. Got a little bit of everything going on with this one.
Yeah, whenever it starts to sound a little bit like pin the feature on the cryptid, which it does, you know, we'll get that where it's like, you wouldn't believe it had the hands of a horse. You're like, did you mean nibs? No, I said what I said. It's just like, okay, it looked like a camel and a donkey and a flamingo all at once. You're like, how?
This one had, it looked like a reptilian, so I'm guessing a snake.
Okay.
With a snake, but it's got a horse tail.
So you can braid it. It's nice. Brush it.
Okay, yeah. And then its head, instead of a snake head, it looks like a dog, but kind of also a horse, but also the nose of a camel.
McGruff the crime dog with a nose of a camel and a snake body. You can't handle that. This is like
and
on Beetlejuice.
Tail. And Lucifer's tail. We combine them all into one.
It's a mega cryptid. Yeah, I just envision that Beetlejuice when he turns into like turns into that giant snake railing. Oh, that used to freak me out as a kid. God. Well, and it's like I think they're standing upstairs and they hold their hand on the railing and then it's Beetlejuice and then he slithers away as this like giant snake. And that just his always as a kid. Because it was a snake with a Michael Keaton head. Michael
now,
Keaton head.
Is the cryptid that somebody needs to find.
That's right. It's like, it's showtime.
As for whether the Cadborosaurus could be responsible for the Salish Sea feet mystery, ex-Mountie John Kirk of the Cryptozoology Club didn't seem to think so. The beasts have never been reported as attacking humans. However, alongside the cryptid, the episode also explored whether serial killer Robert Picton may be responsible, though experts found it unlikely.
I did respect that about John Kirk is that, first of all, he wears a black bandana over his head with, like, wraparound Oakley sunglasses, which you have to if you're a cryptozoology expert.
But that's the uniform of a cryptozoologist.
It really is. Oh, and a cutoff t-shirt with no sleeves, you know. But he was – I thought he was really respectful. He was so stoked to talk about the Cadborosaurus, but it was almost like when – because he comes from a law enforcement background, when they were like, do you think that the Cadborosaurus is responsible for the feet? He just was just like, no, of course not. So I appreciated
good
that.
For
that
him.
Yeah, that he was just like, no, this is real people. It's like very nefarious what is happening to them, whether it's by, you know, they're missing because someone made them missing or sadly because they went missing on their own. He was just like, no, I don't think it has anything to do with it. So I think Netflix was like, people say this, we will address it, but I'm happy that they weren't like, maybe it was that. Because I think you can get. It's something, it's a fun, not fun, but it's like a weird mystery. You could kind of get too far afield with speculation. And I appreciate that they explored it and then sort of went, no, I mean, come on. Especially this guy was like, I'm an expert in both crime and cryptids and no.
Well, he's one to know. But yeah, cryptids are fun. And I mean, sometimes the stories aren't as fun. But when there are actual people that go missing, I do appreciate when law enforcement is like, we can't just chalk this up to, oh, well, the Cadborosaurus, because I don't think the families are going to appreciate an answer like that. And also it minimizes, like, there's something going on here that we need to address. We need to figure out what it is so we can hopefully prevent it from happening again.
Mm-hmm. Sinister Hood will be right back.
The show also shined a spotlight on Jenny Neal, whose son Antonio has been missing since 2016. Jenny had been working with police to solve her son's disappearance for many months when there was a break in the case. A Timberland boot with the right foot inside it was found on Jetty Island in January of 2019, and DNA matched it to Antonio. For the Netflix series, Jenny retraced the area where the boot was found alongside the detective she's been working with. While the visit was emotional, Jenny expressed her gratitude.
It's insane that somebody would actually pick up just some random item on the beach. I'm just so grateful that they were curious enough to look at that boot. It's really impactful in the show when she says, you know, I got this feeling in my gut that I just was like, I know he's gone. And she said, I just knew. She said, it's a mom's feeling. You know, they're another part of you. And I knew he was gone. But I was like, well, I can't give up because what if he's not? And then she said, you know, kind of finding that, I was like, I'm not wrong. I knew he was gone in my heart, but now I can at least maybe find out what happened to him.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that piece of the puzzle that maybe that was the last piece she needed to at least find closure for herself. She might not know all the details, but she knows that she was right. And that feeling, I mean, it is part of your heart walking around out there. So she knew. Moms always know.
She
and
did.
I'm also grateful that somebody picked up that boot. I mean, knowing now, because this has, you know, been a mystery for decades, and with the Netflix series and stuff, I think that it would be more common for someone to pick up a shoe that they found on this beach specifically because of the history.
Yeah, you might say this may help somebody. This may be a piece of a crime scene. And I think the detective that's working with her, they do think there was foul play in his case specifically. Mm-hmm. And the finding it where they found it was really far away, like 3 years later. But they do say at least that helps figure out like what he was wearing at the time. So he probably went missing this far away based on Professor McCready's ocean current analysis, based on Professor Anderson's decomposition analysis. It's all just these little pieces that for people who otherwise their loved ones are gone without a trace, they're at least able to kind of say, okay, detective, what can you help me with now? Knowing what else we know, and now we don't have a body, but we at least have this. So it's something to say. If you're walking around the beaches of the Salish Sea and you do see a shoe, you know, if you don't want to pick it up, just calling it in because it could be everything to a parent.
Yeah, for sure. And even like the type of shoe, that's a piece of evidence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, like, oh, maybe they only wore this type of shoe when they went to work. So now you can piece together a bit of a timeline, like you said, if there's foul play involved. Antonio's case remains unsolved. Antonio Jordan Neal has been missing since December 12, 2016 from Everett, Washington. His partial remains were found on Jetty Island in Everett, Washington on January 1, 2019. Snohomish County Sheriff's detectives continue to investigate and ask that anyone with information regarding Neal or his disappearance call 911 or the sheriff's tip line at 425-388-3845. In 2019, the BC Coroner's Service launched a portal called the Unidentified Human Remains Interactive Viewer. Anyone with information or questions about any of the investigations displayed on the UHR Interactive Viewer can contact the Special Investigations Unit using the relevant case number seen in the viewer and email bcc.siu@gov.bc.ca. So what do we think?
I think that the coroner service launching that portal is a really good idea to help crowdsource information. I think we've seen the public wants to help, you know, whether it's that don't fuck with cats or whatever, you know, people want to jump in and try to help as much as they can. And so if there's a way to, you know, cross check the unidentified remains that are found, you know, these feet that are found with missing persons cases and understanding now the ocean current shift, that it's probably not a bunch of people that went missing from the beaches of, the Salish Sea, but a little bit further out, that maybe this interactive portal can help bring some brains from around the world that are just like, want to do it because it's a passion of theirs. And it, but for that information, they wouldn't be able to help.
For sure. The web sleuths are cracking down on all sorts of cases. I mean, over the past, like, just 5 years, so many things. Or, you know, podcasters that take an interest in a cold case. So you don't have to be in law enforcement or, you know, some kind of government authority to help with this kind of stuff. So I'm glad that they opened that. It is just so wild to me that the ocean works in such mysterious ways that people could go missing from totally different states even, but just the way the currents flow and everything, they happen to end up on this one beach. That's just how it kind of works out. And why they ended up there, that remains to be seen. But if you're walking down the Salish Sea beach and you see a shoe, don't just ignore it.
Yeah, call it in, because it's, but the portal is kind of a digital way to help. And then there's the physical being there kind of way to help. So
it's
a mystery that I think has been officially solved in the aggregate insofar as like, why does this specific phenomena keep happening? But ironically, every single foot that continues to wash up holds another mystery of like, how did they get here? And even if a family says, you know, your family member, you know, fell in over here or purposefully jumped in over here, that still leaves a bunch of questions. So it's sad that it's not, it can be a piece of the puzzle, like you said, but it's not going to give everybody every kind of closure. And that's something, unfortunately, we can't all give them. But
yeah,
it's at least I'm glad to see that when it's discussed, especially on a large platform like Netflix, it was discussed with a good amount of respect and consideration and was not too, you know, sensationalized just for the, you know, the media, because it does more harm than good. Now at least people go, oh, another foot was found. Maybe I can help, or maybe, you know, it's not, oh, perhaps it was a serial killer from long ago.
So. No, I like that when it takes the sensationalism out of it, because I think it hits harder for people. It makes it more realistic. And also when you bring science into it of like, this is why, it's just because the currents and the way the ocean works and everything, then it also becomes less scary for the people that live around there that are like, is this a dumping ground for bodies? I know it's just the feet. And like we also talked about in the Lost Girls of Panama, like, the ankle bones are just one of the first to go when a body starts to decompose. So that's why it can be common to find a shoe with, you know, still the remains of a foot in it, but the rest of the body might not be there.
Yeah, plus our buoyant man-made materials, so sucks it back up to the surface. But that's the power of those sea scavengers down there. What's down there? We got professors like Professor Anderson figuring it out for us.
Yeah. At the very least, even the things we know of, you know, there's a lot going on down there. So if we got another cryptid that we're not aware of, then we need black bandana, wraparound, Ray-Bans, cutoff shirt to tell us exactly what we're dealing with.
That's who I want my cryptid news from, for sure.
Always, every time. Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content, like where this mini-sode originally came from several years ago. You can also join for free to see what we're up to next. We also give free members an archived bonus content once a month, or you can join at one of our tiers and dive into over 800 hours of bonus content. What have we got going on right now, Heather?
Oh, we've got so much stuff on old Patreon. Well, we recently had an unpopular opinions segment that we did that was a little bit millennial with a little bit of a freaky ending for you there. We've got some upcoming true crime headlines. We do those about once a month, so keep you on up to date. The most recent true crime headlines was all updates on prior cases. We updated on the Ellen Greenberg case, what's going on with her. Paul Flores is back in the news, John Wayne Bobbitt. So we
Slenderman case.
The Slenderman case. So any of those older cases we do, we'll come back and do a quick update, as well as the mini-sode like what you heard today, our most recent one on the Juggalos and how they're, are they a gang? I don't know. So whoop. I'm in. Whoop, whoop. I'm one of them.
We also had a recent live stream, and all of those are available too. And audio content as well as video content is up there too. Plus, you get ad-free episodes, weekly audio bonus content, monthly mini-sodes, merch discounts, either 10 or 20% depending on the tier you're at. And most importantly, community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
The absolute best.
And for recent patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show, and make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
Head to Sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. There's no cuter clothes for your kiddos than the Believe and Be Kind Flatwoods Monster shirt, and you can get a grown-up version and match your kid too. Send us your pictures of you matching with your besties. We would love to post them on social media.
Dang, I should have worn my shirt
you
to
wear
the
your
museum.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. What was I thinking?
What
well,
we
wasn't
should,
obviously.
We're going to send a Flatwoods shirt to the museum and be like, just.
Oh, that's you, a good idea. Yeah.
And we can make a print of Ella's thing and be like, if you want to hang this up, you don't feel pressured.
They
but
did have behind the register a lot of children's artwork. So
I like,
think
I'm
we
sure.
could get it up there. Yeah,
I bet we could. But we also have some clearance merch. So act now, because once it's out, including some tour shirts from past years, because we're making room for tour shirts this year. So go check those out and use your Patreon discount code to get your deals.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. We make it super simple to give reviews. We love ones that have 5 stars, especially. You can follow us on socials and check out the episode description for sources used during our research. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and links to those live show tickets for the Full Moon Energy Tour, all dark side of the moon. We explore it all. Cryptids, conspiracies, what really happened during the Apollo mission, what really goes on up there, what do the astronauts see when they're up there? It's a super fun show.
I like to say, we're going to tell you what really goes on the moon, because you're like, what does that mean? Oh, you'll find out.
Whatever you're thinking, I promise you it's not what we're going to say, because what we talk about is so
off the wall.
Outlandish.
It's wheels off. We dug deep on the research
possibly.
For this. My favorite
if
is people.
If somebody had never seen it and was like, oh, do you mean blank blank? I would give you $1,000 if you guessed what we were going to talk about, because that's how absurd it is.
One person knew one what I thought was a pretty niche segment, and one person was like, I just happened to have read about that in a book like years ago. And I was just like, I am shocked that you knew this, because I thought it was like a very weird underground thing. So we love to dig into the depths of the moon for you, which sounds like digging in your crack, but that's not what I mean. But yeah, go to the sinisterhood.com/live shows and come see us talk about the moon.
Please.
You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. You can watch full video versions of our episodes early and ad-free on Patreon. And then a few days later on YouTube. Hi, YouTube. And check us out over on TikTok. We're going to post a couple of quick clips from our Trans-Allegheny Live event here over the next few days. So keep your eyes peeled for that in anticipation of our future episode. And if you want a video shout-out made just for you, head over to cameo.com and search Sinisterhood and order your custom video shout-out. Let us know what you want us to say, who the message is for, what, if any, weird objects from the Sinisterhood studio you want us to incorporate. And we would love to deliver a special video message, whether it's like, happy birthday, happy anniversary, I love you, congratulations, fixing it, it's May, it's Mother's Day, it might be somebody's birthday, Memorial Day, a lot of graduations happen in May. So
we do a lot of pep talks.
We do pep talks.
Get yourself one if you're like, I need a pep talk from somebody. We'd love to do that.
Hell yeah. We've done advice ones where it's like, should I do this? Should I not? Mm-hmm. We're like, we'll let you know what we think. And here's a corn skull at cameo.com/sinisterhood. Christy, where are you at online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Chi,
Talia Karalp,
Julianne Booker,
Elizabeth Cheney,
Joshua Nakamoto,
Angelica Swan,
Jade Lang,
Kayla Cranston,
Kate Perry,
KPT,
Bailey Andring,
Ott B,
Vanessa Douglas,
Brianna Grooms 1234,
Molly Raymiller,
Katie,
Belle B,
Hannah Green,
Gabrielle Downs,
Corey Ireland,
Sarah Acosta,
Savannah McWhorter,
Riley Lewis,
Tony Massa,
Kelly Riedenthal,
Sharla,
Julie Dorschlag,
Steph Wood,
Amanda Volvano,
Amy Buster,
Susan Crow,
Allison Sasso,
and Cassandra Rivera.
Thank you so much for supporting this show. We could not do this without all of you. We sincerely appreciate all your love and support. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinister.